The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
It's 10 years ago this week, if you can believe it, that we were all stopped in our tracks by the images of Alan Kurdi, the three-year-old Syrian boy whose body washed up on a Greek beach. It was one of those pictures that encapsulated what was described as the Mediterranean migrant crisis at the time. John Lannan is with me, who's the CEO of Doris. John, can you remember when you saw this image for the first time, the pictures of little Alan Kurdi?
Good evening. I think we all remember that shocking image very well, you know, of young Alan Kurdi's lifeless body was lying face down in a Turkish beach, as you said. Drew global attention to the Syrian refugee crisis at that time. A lot has happened since then. Some of it has been positive. We've had over 4 million people who escaped the war in Ukraine given temporary protection around Europe, about 120,000 of them in Ireland. Right now, we're seeing widespread revulsion at the genocide that's happening in Gaza. That's amongst ordinary people right across Ireland and indeed right across Europe. In Ireland, there are refugee resettlement programs still for refugees from Syria, including the current community sponsorship program where groups of ordinary people come together to welcome a family from a refugee camp in Lebanon. But on the other hand, we have to bear in mind that there are about 123 million people displaced in the world right now, forcibly displaced, that is. And that's largely as a result of conflict and wars and oppression and climate change. And our world, the first or developed world, is, you know, largely responsible for a lot of what has caused that, you know, for the militarization, the consumption, the political interference. So we have a responsibility to respond.
It's probably those numbers and the sheer scale of the crisis is probably part of the reason that the image resonated so much with people. You know, once numbers kind of go past a certain point, that's all they are just numbers. It's hard for us to get our head around them or contextualize them. It's all very abstract. Whereas, you know, the image of this three-year-old kid, there's nothing abstract about it.
Absolutely. You're right. I think that really struck a chord with people. And again, when we see some of the horrific images that are coming out of Gaza and we see how forced starvation is now impacting in addition to the bombing, and we see how, you know, small children that have never been responsible for anything, you know, in relation to the situation in the Middle East are suffering, it really pulls on the heartstrings. You know, at the risk of boring people with another figure, I think it's worth mentioning the International Organization for Migration's Missing Migrant Project. Since around that time of Alan Kurdi's death, they've registered 32,600 deaths in the Mediterranean. That's since 2014. About 2,500 of those were last year. So every one of those was a parent or a sister or a brother or a child that's grieved and sadly missed by others, you know. So thousands of people are being forced every year to cross the Mediterranean out of necessity. It's really, really perilous, as we can see from those deaths. But people are still in situations that are even worse, and they have to take the risks to cross. But unfortunately, now we're seeing increasing levels of securitization that's linked to militarization. We're seeing that there are pushbacks to the Libyan coast. We're seeing that, you know, in many cases, the efforts to support NGOs that are doing Trojan work or trying to do it to rescue people is inadequate. And sadly, Europe is becoming quite inhospitable, not just on its Mediterranean borders, but in the Balkans and in other parts of the continent as well.
When Alan Kurdi died on that beach, or rather when he died at sea and his body was washed up on that beach, lots of promises were made about reforming the system and, you know, that we would try to avoid this in the future. Now, as you said, the statistics would suggest otherwise, just looking at the sheer number of people who've died in the last year alone. Did Alan Kurdi's death change anything in the long run?
I think Alan Kurdi's death contributed to the revulsion of ordinary people about what happens to people that are forcibly displaced, particularly families and children, and the manner in which they suffer. And as I said, I think, you know, the suffering of people in Gaza right now is something that, that shocks and really upsets ordinary people. The problem we have is that the mechanisms and the structures of government and also at intergovernment level are not moving fast enough in the direction that they need to give support to what ordinary people feel, what ordinary people want to do. And we're not seeing the humane response to forced migration that we need to see. We're not seeing the safeguards that are needed and that should be put in place, not just to protect the human rights of people who come seeking international protection or come to Europe, but just to protect the lives and the safety of people so that, you know, we're not facing into another year where 2,500, you know, people die in the Mediterranean just trying to reach safety.
John Lannan, CEO of Durrus. John, thanks a million for joining us. Mark Mellett was Chief of Staff of Ireland's Defence Forces from this time, from 2015 until 2021, and he's with me now as well. Mark, you're welcome to the show. I understand, actually, you took over almost exactly at this time, is that right, when Alan Kurdi's image appeared around the world?
About later that month, actually, his appearance was on the 2nd of September yesterday, 10 years ago, and I took over as Chief of Staff of the Defence Forces on the 29th of September. But I will never recall or forget the image, and it shocked us all. And we had in the previous months been discussing with the Taoiseach Enda Kenny and the Minister for Defence responding to an earlier tragedy where between 800 and 1,100 migrants had lost their lives in the Mediterranean. And it was that decision then of government to send the Defence Forces and the Irish Naval Service in particular to work with the Italian government in providing a response known as Operation Pontus.
And what was the experience like of those members of the Defence Forces who served in that operation?
It was very, very challenging. I remember going to see a ship in Sardinia. They had just come in from a rescue operation. I think they had rescued about 300 migrants. And there was a sense of dismay because on that particular occasion, just hours before the rescue, a 14-year-old boy had been murdered on the vessel that was carrying the people who were rescued. He'd been murdered simply because he complained that his relatives were choking to death below deck, where they were crammed in a space where they couldn't breathe. And in front of the rest of the people that we rescued, his head was clubbed in. And it was just shocking. I remember at the time my own son was 14 years of age. And to think that that could happen in today's day and age was awful. But and the sense of, I suppose, of forlorn amongst the ship's company, that if they had only been there, you know, 20 minutes earlier, they could have saved that youngster. But, you know, the overall impact was just what has happened to society, that people feel so desperate that they need to go to such challenging means to come to Europe on very challenging routes across the central Mediterranean, eastern Mediterranean route, and also the western Mediterranean. And more recently now we know of the route out towards the Canaries, where I think in the recent past 69 people lost their lives in the last couple of weeks. So while it's no longer on the news profile, the reality is significant numbers are still trying to make their way across the Mediterranean and across from North Africa towards the Canaries, and many people are losing their lives.
And do you think that the atmosphere exists today that might see a similar response, an orchestrated European response using the likes of the Naval Service? And we might talk about the shortcomings therein and our ability to actually take part in a moment. But I mean, does that atmosphere still pertain, or would it be more difficult to get up off the ground today?
I think it's more difficult. The reality is that this matter has become really polarised. It's been hijacked in many cases by social media, by right wing, and in some cases there are. It's been used and weaponised to create division. It's used to actually create division within Europe to actually polarise states, so that unity and the values that define the European Union, and in fact define us all as a civilised society, are in the crosshairs. And you know, it is really really difficult when you think about the challenges we saw around that poor boy's death 10 years ago, and the fact that perhaps up to 3,000 children of a similar age have died in Gaza. It's just, I think we're really, really in at a time which is seminal in human history as to how do we restore the values that are required that define us as a civilized society, where we can put the support back into institutions of international humanitarian law, where we can look at the requirement to build back up and act on the judgments from the ICC and the International Criminal the Court of Justice. We're all, I suppose, scratching our heads as to what has happened in the last decade that has made us so cold to these challenging circumstances.
Yeah, and I don't know, is it an unwelcome byproduct of the human propensity for resilience or something, but we have a tendency to become inured to these things as well, don't we? Like we can get used to a degree of suffering. I mean, the level of shock wears off and it continues to bubble away in the background and it doesn't bother us as much on a daily basis.
I think you're right, but I think one thing we're not talking about enough is that the impact and the inversion of power that social media has brought. In the last 15 years in particular, it has really turned narratives into polarised discussions that actually are pitting communities against each other and in many ways weaponising. And I've no doubt that there are state actors involved in this. I've no doubt that, in fact, even the Russian Federation wants to see this disharmony, this disunity. For Russia to become stronger, all they have to do is make Europe weaker. And it can do that by polarizing opinion. And there is plenty of evidence that bot farms and trolls that are sponsored by the Russian Federation are actually in the middle of this fight now, just creating that division in society.
And do you think that reality is underestimated by the public and policymakers?
I think so. I think we're really not attuned to the amount of disinformation and also misinformation. Just a subtle difference is disinformation is known by the perpetrator to be wrong, but it's pushed out there to shape opinions in the wrong direction. And the misinformation then arises when somebody innocent takes it as facts and then acts accordingly. So the reality with regards to the numbers that crossed the Mediterranean in that period for 2015, 16 and 17, they were not unlike the numbers who actually migrated tragically from Ireland through the Bowl of Tears in that terrible period of 1846 to 1851. On average, each year, about 200,000 Irish people were forced to try and go across the Atlantic, many of them losing their lives on the way. It's a similar number, actually. You would have it presented to you as if it was a huge number coming across the Mediterranean. It's a relatively small number. Tragically, 1.5 million Irish people were forced to migrate at that period in the aftermath of the famine. And we could do well to look at the causes. What are the drivers that force people to leave where they have grown up or where they've come from? And yes, there are economic reasons, but very often it's war, it's actually famine, it's linked. I mean, the top three countries, I think, that are actually migrating are Mali, Afghanistan, and also Sudan and Syria. And that's the reality. So if you just look at the circumstances where those people are coming from, they're coming from very, very difficult environments.
And Mark, before I let you go, I mean, when that image did appear on newspapers and on our phones and tablets and screens and went around the world and caused so many people to stop in their tracks, those same policymakers I talked about, those politicians, they made an awful lot of promises that we wouldn't see the likes of it again, or certainly there would be radical intervention to reduce the likelihood of seeing it again. Did that turn out to be the case?
I'm afraid, time has actually anesthetized us to the actual shocking factor of that very picture. But I think it's good that you and this program have recalled that event. And I think it's good that you allowed us to have this discussion to bring back the cold facts that were associated with that event. Like, at the end of the day, what defines us as a civilized society are values that we hold together. And if we don't protect those values, if we don't protect institutions like the UN, International Criminal Court, International Court of Justice and international humanitarian law, they fall away one by one and we're all the less for it.
Mark Mallett, Chief of Staff of Ireland's Defence Forces from 2015 until 2021. Mark, thanks a million for joining us.
Kieran, thank you.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4. on News Talk.